Center Maryland's The Lobby Pod. We have two of Annapolis and really the DMV's most prominent government affairs, professional public relations, and lawyers. We have Compass Public Affairs, Compass Strategies with us. I want to let you talk a little bit about how you group out those different groups. But again, we all know if we're in Annapolis and we know the lobby, we know we're with former Senator Rob Garagiola and his wonderful work, professional and life partner, Hannah Powers Garagiola. Welcome to both of you. It's been fun to watch your careers as we've been in sort of a similar generation space. It's been a wonder to watch you all both on the public service side. Rob, you were an amazing state senator who came into the game at a very young age and impressed a lot of people. And Hannah, you come from one of the more storied political institutions in the Mid-Atlantic in Senator Mike Miller's office. So I just welcome you both and tell me what's going on in Annapolis today.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having us on, Damian. It's a pleasure. Today, redistricting. So a lot of the members are actually here today. The House was not really going to be present a ton. It was mostly virtual, but I was just walking the halls in the House of Delegates building and ran into, you know, you wear a mask this year and we weren't even allowed last year. And then 2 years ago, there was, you know, that's when everything kind of hit the fan. But I think people are sort of trying to get on with it. You know, I hit a couple of legislators that are going to be voting on some bills I have before them, and it feels a little bit normal, which is great.
Yeah, but I think, you know, last year was definitely a shutdown year, and everything was done, you know, basically by text message or every now and then you might have seen them out and about, but that was probably pretty rare last year. I think things are starting to open up a little bit, and I think, as Hannah mentioned, big changes. We're able to actually walk the halls and, you know, pop in people's offices, which is refreshing. We're active socially, you know, and anyone in this world, I think, is, and I think legislators as well. And so it's good to actually kind of see people again.
No doubt about that. Do you feel like, I mean, your firm is, again, we talked about the great careers you've already had as professionals, but you embarked on a new journey together, which is the firm that Hannah is leading. Talk to me a little bit about the formation of that firm, sort of what you're about and what you can do for people. I think people would dig hearing that.
Yeah, sure. I'll start out and then Rob, you want to fill in any gaps? So Rob and I obviously worked together at another firm prior to forming Compass. And, you know, Compass was formed because we sort of had our own new fresh ideas. And a lot of times when you're with a institutional firm, it's hard to make changes. And we wanted to be at the steering wheel. And so we are. And so we have Compass Government Relations. And that's, you know, kind of what you mostly see us as, Damian, but we also do Compass Public Relations. And then Rob heads up Compass Law Partners.
No, I totally, I see it and feel it. You know, we created KO Public Affairs, Steve and I, about 14 years ago.
Wow.
And we saw this world moving where, you know, lobbyists were coming more and more out of the back room and that their game was not defined necessarily by the entirety of their legislative relationships. They needed to find ways to move outside the legislature to make their case. So, and then I see times as a lawyer where, you know, there are just a few issues where, you know, it's not right for Venable. It's not right for, George Nemphos. It's not right for Compass Law, but it might fit for O'Doherty and Associates. So I totally get, the combination of all those services. How do you think your clients are reacting? Do you feel like you have clients that may come in as public relations people, and then they also see what the amazing stuff you're doing on the government affairs side, and you see some cross enculturation there, or Do they remain like distinct, different entities? Because in my experience, it kind of flows together, but for obvious legal reasons and such, they have to partition themselves off. But love to hear how you're handling it.
Yeah, I mean, there are three distinct and separate businesses, and there's some overlap of owners, partners, principals of those respective businesses, but there are also we have lobbyists who are not owners or really much involved in the public relations or the law side, and then we have lawyers who are not involved in the public relations or government lobbying side. So there is distinction, there is some overlap. I would say Hannah and myself predominantly are the overlap, but there's a couple others that toggle maybe between one or two of those three businesses. So they are separate. With respect to clients, we have had some clients now that have actually engaged all three businesses.
That's cool.
They needed direct lobbying. They needed certain advocacy from a public relations standpoint, and they needed certain legal services. So.
They want you guys. You too. They know what you're about, and they trusted you on the government affairs side, and they, they want you in the room, right?
That's right. It's exciting. I mean, it's a vision we had, and the other aspect of it. You said DMV. I mean, we're active in DC. We're obviously very active in Maryland, but we're also very active in Delaware. We've been doing that for a number of years, and what's really exciting is we have clients now in Delaware that we're trying to flip to be Maryland clients.
That's a good one.
That, first happened last year where that occurred. A lot of times it was a Maryland client that became a Delaware client, but now we're at a point of maturity in Delaware. We're getting clients there, and we're trying to get them to engage us in Maryland or for other services.
Delaware is an underrated place to do business. It's at least by Maryland standards. It's a wonderful business community there, and very tight knit. And then the culture down there in Southern Delaware, where all the legislation gets done, is fun to watch too. Do you feel like when you chart out your growth as a firm, do you look at it regionally? Do you look at it like by the people you're at? You've had this great people to the team that give you sort of different reach and dynamic. How do you all evaluate how to grow? I'm just asking for my own. I'm just because I'm going to steal whatever ideas you have.
And anyone else who's listening to this, no, it's a combination of things. I mean, I'm actually going to be in Wilmington Friday, having lunch with some lobbyists there that we're having some conversations with. So there may be opportunity that occurs from that to kind of further grow our footprint in Delaware. But at the same time, we have an interest in expanding in, potentially Pennsylvania and or Virginia. And, Virginia just had the election, so there's a lot of new faces there. It's possible this could be a pivot point. Maybe it's 2 years from now. We're looking at the elections in Pennsylvania right now for later this year, like Maryland. It might be a pivot point. So it's kind of a combination of, a team member who has some reach, or sometimes we're actively, jumping in ourselves and finding someone later who can potentially augment what we're doing.
Now, I'm a big fan of both of you on Facebook and the social medias because I love to see how you handle the struggle that a lot of us deal with, which is, how do you manage your professional life? How do you manage your marriage? How do you manage your family, your community? And to me, it looks like you have made a very concerted effort to really dig into that Annapolis community there. I know we have a national champion sailor in Hannah. Did I get that right? National champion at the St. Mary's sailing team.
Yeah, I was lucky to be part of a very talented team.
That sounds very modest.
I know.
but it sounds like you've really dug into that community in a real family way that I don't think I have seen quite so resonant since I've been in Annapolis politics or Maryland politics. So I'd love you to talk a little bit about, I'm sure you're going to tell me, oh, there's no strategy, we're just doing what we're doing. But I'd love to hear you talk about that balancing act. And it seems like Hannah, you're able to pull it all off, which is the dream of many and the success of few. So I think a lot of people would like to learn a little bit about how you make that balance true.
Well, thanks. That's very flattering. I think Rob and and I comes from, we have a lot of mutual respect for one another. And even though we work together, and you know, you did call me his work wife, Rob actually has another work wife. He and I don't work on all the same issues. So a lot of times at the end of the day, I can, you know, pour a glass of wine and say, how was your day? And I can understand exactly what he's talking about because I work in the same field. But, you know, we kind of run in a lot of different directions. And, you know, Damian, the fast paced life we live, especially in a late January. So we have a lot of fun working together, even though we're, you know, not really together all the time at work. And I think we like doing the same things, and we try to spend, because we're out so much during the week, we try to spend weekends just kind of enjoying our kids, the town we live in, in warmer months, being on the water. And I think you're right, we do put a lot of it on social media. I think just to make people know that we're not stiff, you know, and we are real, and I think sometimes are humble about what is happening if it's a sick kid, or we put that out there too. But I think it's really just showcasing sort of what we're all about. And that's work hard, play hard, have fun, you know, stick with it.
Yeah, see, I saw it always as a very, you know, I never saw it as puffery or anything like that. I always saw it as a very sort of real life, raising a family, raising a business, raising a family in Annapolis. And I think that gives you a lot of connectivity to people that you've already had relationships with, that they can kind of pop back in and out of your life as, you know, according to whatever activity or work thing is going on. But, you know, it just gives you an accessibility that I don't think that I don't think many other people in the lobbying community are leveraging. So I think it's brave, and I think it's smart. And I think, you know, it gives us all a little window into not just your world, but the world that we have. And so I would encourage it.
Thanks. It's just us, really. I mean, It's just us being us, frankly, and it's who we are.
And that community is small enough, you know, you can't, you know, everybody in Annapolis, even if I haven't been down there in 5 or 10 years, they all know me. They know my worst traits. They know my best traits. Right. There's no escaping it. Right.
Right. I know the Speaker of the House, no matter how many times I'll see her a week, will always ask about the kids. And it is such a nice icebreaker. I guess it helps that they're like kind of cute, but,
Well, you won there too. You won that too. If you guys aren't producing good looking kids, I don't know who is. So talk to me about the practice. You have some of the more prominent clients that you could ever hope for in this business. Talk to me about how you've developed did you start with a couple core clients? Just talk to me about how you sort of developed this remarkable practice.
I think I would have to say relationships. Like, we started with nobody. And that's terrifying, as you know, Damian, you started a business too. Rob has older kids in college. So, and then I think those that we had worked with in the past liked working with us and wanted to keep working with us. And then the more you are in this business, meeting people, people are observing your work and seeing your effectiveness. We've developed, you know, a pretty nice portfolio of clients. We have, you know, some Fortune 50 and some nonprofits and a little bit of everything in between.
You feel like, I feel like I can never do enough business development. And so it's like I have like this panic every couple months, or maybe a client or an issue goes away and you have a panic. Have you guys found any discipline about client development, or do you find that it kind of comes to you, or do you find that as you are your disciplined self, it comes to you? Like, what, talk to, give a little hint to folks out there who might want to be doing the same thing that you are, how they might organize their client development or business development.
Think about it, you know, all the time, truthfully. I mean, you have to. And, you know, some of it is organic in that it's, you know, a point of contact with a client that moves on to another business and they liked working with us. And so now the new business that they're with, you know, becomes a client. And so sometimes that happens. But I would say every week in kind of team meetings, there's a portion of that meeting that's focused on business development. And it's not just, you know, Hannah and me that are the generators. We're trying to encourage and have seen success with other team members, you know, from the most junior to the, you know, mid-level to some of them who are becoming senior in their own right, doing the same thing. And so part of it, it's, you know, it's teaching them how to fish, so to speak. But we do spend time on it. We do it, you know, pretty frequently. You know,
yeah, I bet if it's anything like my experience, there's times where you have people working with you that don't know that they can be a part of the client development experience, don't know that they want to be, you know, it's seen as like a very special role, and it is very empowering. I think if you are a young, you know, like one of the young people in your firm, one of the newer people, I should say, you know, like if they develop clients or one client or two clients, they're going to be more empowered in their job. You guys are going to have more, you know, they're going to have more heft in the firm because they're driving the top line. People present a lot of different values, whether you're a creative director or a publicity person or a lobbyist, but it can be such an empowering exercise for the younger people to even just be in the flow of it and get, you know, like I can help Rob get this client by talking to this person, exactly. You know, creating right. That culture, right? Right. That's pretty special.
That's right.
Totally appreciate you correcting yourself when you said young too, newer people.
I flatter people and then I do it incorrectly. So it's sort of the worst of all worlds, but.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, it's funny because sometimes you'll be like tracking down a client for a couple months and they're like, oh, I'm coming to the DC area, let's get drinks. And then they got sick or you're really close. You feel good. You've had a couple of good encounters with them. And then out of nowhere, like your dad's friend's daughter needs a lobbyist and they're like a really good company. So you're not even really trying and one falls in your lap and the one that you're really hunting and really wanted, you're like, where'd you go?
It's the residual of your preparedness though, Hannah, I think.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
You know, you're putting yourself out there. A lot of people don't put themselves out there.
Yeah, they're watching my Instagram story.
Talk to me about some of the stuff you're facing in the legislature this year or some of the things you're leading down there. Give you a chance to talk about that. You know, we got a great audience somehow for this. So give it a special plug for who you're working with today.
Sure. I mean, there's a range of issues that we're working on. I mean, you know, we represent auto dealers, we represent rental car companies. We do a lot of procurement as well. And a lot
That's
of that
tough
is
work. Mm-hmm. That's tough work.
You know, and we do it also at the local level to some extent. So, you know, there's some energy issues we're dealing with. There's tax issues. It runs the gamut. And some of the things, you know, might be high profile and some are just not that sexy, but, you know, there needs to be.
They're really important to that client.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it's I would say this session has gotten off to a fast start. I think last year when it was shut down, the leadership, the speaker and the Senate president said, hey, you know, especially because they're relatively new, but with the pandemic in particular, we're going to start early, get your bills pre-filed. And I think they were, you know, that was a new thing last year. And I think what they found is, you know what, this is a pretty good system. And so now as lobbyists, we got to adjust to that. And also we have to help our clients adjust to that. And, you know, I would say already, you know, here we are with 2 weeks into session today, and there've been some pretty substantive bill hearings. There's bills on the floor. And we've got, you know, I've got like 5 or 6 bill hearings next week that I'm going to be, you know, managing. So it's really kind of hit the ground running. And I think that's going to be the new normal, even post pandemic.
How do you guys deal with the hearing schedule all online, managing the clients? Is that a whole new, let me give you an example. In my world, you know, a lot of times I'm trying to get, you know, master plan developments approved by local governments. And, you know, there's a lot of documents and there's a lot of plans and elevations and all this sort of stuff. and people can't get around a table and look at it. There's some cool technology that we all share. It's just not the same dynamic. Right? You guys face that same kind of situation when you go from live hearings to online, or is it a whole new kind of business? We're spending, I will tell you this, the younger, newer people in our firm, in the pandemic, I guarantee you they spend 20% of their work time helping professionals like my age, but on the client side, just get through, you know, the Zoom, just get through the putting the right documents on the Microsoft Teams stuff. It's getting better and better over time, but talk to me in your world, how that dynamic is sort of fleshing out.
In a weird way. I mean, look, I keep Rob very humble by making fun of him a lot, but he is kind of a ninja. Like he can testify, like he'll have like 4 bill hearings in one day. And when it was in person, I would be like covering for him, but I wouldn't have been the one to sign up because Rob, you know, Rob was the politician. He's very organized with his thoughts. And so he's very good at testifying. And I kind of prefer Rob to testify than me. And I'll be like sweating it because they'll have like called the bill. They called the first person, the senator that's presenting the bill. And I'm like, where are you? And Rob's like still testifying over in the House. And then I'll like look at the door and Rob's walking in. So I sometimes think he is kind of a little bit of a ninja. And I think when it's online, it's actually easier in a way for people that have 4 bills in one day, because you're sitting at your desk and you just toggle versus like having to run across the street, show the security guard your badge,
right,
take the elevator, wait for the elevator. Oh wait, it's advocacy day. And there are 400 people
right
in front of you.
Right.
So in a weird way, it, like the hearings kind of run a little bit smoother, which is awesome.
I think the adjustment is going to be, you know, the Senate is saying that around mid-February, they're going to go live. And so, you know, we've gotten used to this, like Hannah was saying, where you're at your desk on your computer and you're, you know, moving from Ways and Means to, you know, House Ways and Means to Senate Finance, like with a click of a mouse, basically. And now, you know, on the Senate side, you know, that's the thing I'm gonna need to figure out. Like I might have to go testify in front of finance and then get back to my computer so I can testify in the House, because they're still gonna be remote, you know, for the entirety of the session,
right,
it appears. And it'll be an interesting dynamic, you know, and then signups are different under this virtual world. You gotta sign up 48 hours in advance, and the Senate, when they go back to live, you can sign up the morning of, and it'll be an adjustment and everyone will muddle through it. But it'll be interesting to see in a couple of weeks kind of how that transition occurs on the Senate side.
Yeah, we're kind of excited because it seems as though the Senate is going to open up a little bit more for some social activity. And so we have a lot of clients that like to wine and dine. And, you know, you per the ethics laws, you can with certain parameters. And so I think it'll be nice. I mean, just, you know, an hour ago when I was walking the halls of the House, you know, they were like, what else you got? What else you got? Every legislator that I ran into, because they didn't see anyone in person really last year. And I think everyone in this business is probably a little bit of a social animal.
That's
so
right.
with the exception of a few, but yeah, I think it's going to be, I think I'm looking forward to it. We like what we do, obviously. And so it'll be fun to kind of,
interact.
Yeah.
I think, you know, one thing I would like y'all to consider is that, you know, I think both of you have an excellent reputation for being sort of the fluid of progress, right? There's like things happening and things going on, but there are certain people and certain elements that are sort of always in the flow of things. And I would put you all in that category from my limited vantage point. But you know, what else has been special about this time? When you're on a screen or when you're seeing your competitors or your partners work on projects in the remote or online context, you're like, man, you know what? These people are real knowledge workers. They're not just relationship people or legislative experts. These people are knowledgeable human beings about a whole host of issues. And I just wonder if this pandemic, you know, shows a little more of that skill set and assets that you and others have. It sort of puts the industry, I wonder, in a little bit of a different light. You know, the tech guys all think we're down there slapping each other's back and, you know, doing
right.
beer bongs or whatever they envision. And those people are all on like Zoom calls doing coding and what, you know, and so And now I think that people like that have gotten a little bit of a glimpse that your job is a lot more complex and a lot more serious than I think people understand.
Yeah, for sure. I think
Damien, you just talk too much. You can say that. It's okay.
Well, I mean, it's like, you know, I think you nailed it, but the pandemic, I think, really did separate certain lobbyists from others, I guess, in terms of true relationships and skill set, because you had to adapt and you had to, first of all, you had to have everybody's cell phone number.
And that's something. And you had it. You know that. Nobody has more cell phones than you guys.
Yeah. I mean, we do have a nice little Excel spreadsheet of birthdays and cell phone numbers and pets and of the entire, every decision maker in the state.
You got to be nimble on this, you know, and I think a lot of other firms have adapted too, and we certainly did. And I think, you know, we were just started as a firm, you know, just a little more than 3 years ago. So kind of getting up and running and then popping right into COVID. I mean, we were already very nimble to begin with. And so I think we were able to adapt maybe a little faster, but, you know, I see it with a number of other, you know, colleagues in the industry and other firms in the industry as well. It's, we're all kind of figuring this out and getting through it.
Now, you know, I haven't been down there in 2022. I haven't been on the State Circle campus there. Talk to me about what I'm missing. Who are some of what are the great people or some of the great scenes that you've seen so far? Or just if you could give folks that are like me stuck behind a screen a little flavor of what's actually going on in the state capitol, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Off the bat, the speaker made some pretty sweeping leadership changes, and so that's changed things. I was just watching a hearing for a client in Economic Matters, and new chair CT Wilson and vice chair Brian Crosby were running the committee, and it's interesting to see because we've had Derek Davis for how long running that committee. So I think that's kind of one of the major things, just kind of the how she shuffled the deck a little bit. So that's a major change and a little bit unusual for the last session in a term.
The last change in that committee that I remember was Mike Bush, right? Becoming speaker, and Kristen and all the John going up to become speaker. So that is all happening again in a sense.
The other thing that's interesting too is that you have a lot of the top statewide positions that are going to be changing hands as well, with the attorney general's race, with obviously the governor's race, you know, a lot of candidates on the Democratic side and a few on the Republican side and then comptroller. So it's interesting to see all of that flesh out, as well as the state legislative, particularly, you know, with these new districts and kind of what that means. And, you know, the national politics sometimes leads into the state a little bit. And, you know, I think just curiosity with many, like, what will that mean? You know, kind of the national tempo for purposes of some of these races. So it's a fascinating time, certainly. And, you know, the primary is less than 5 months away now. And a lot of folks, I think, are thinking about that as they're plotting through the session as well.
And the caucus, Hannah, you've had such a pretty unique view into that world on the Senate side, the caucuses being the sort of the political arm of keeping the Senate Democrats where they are in position. Is that whole world changed quite a bit from the Mike Miller days? He was so very hands-on and so very top down on all those things. We'll say it's for better, we'll say it's for worse, it really doesn't matter. It's a change. What's different? What's going on there? And what are some, you know, opportunities or liabilities for folks in our world as a result of the change in that leadership structure?
I think it gives both the presiding officers an opportunity to kind of identify themselves as their own unique, you know, leader with their own style. And Mike and Mike were institutions, and, you know, I worked for the Senate president, and always will be so appreciative of the opportunity he gave me to, you know, kind of shine and become knowledgeable about how the process works by exposure and giving me opportunities. And I think, you know, this next Senate, the current Senate president and the current House Speaker certainly have their challenges, but they're, you know, the caucus has given them a vote of confidence. And I think that they're both up to the challenge.
Yeah, I hear, you know, I hear a little like, just, it really sounds like sort of growing or changing pains to me from the core of people that are interested in the Senate presidency or the speakership and how that relates into district races, you know. But I also think that something that people don't understand about Ferguson and Speaker Jones, Senate President Ferguson and Speaker Jones, is that they're coming from a culture of sort of decentralization, right? Like these younger members they've got their own Twitter handles. They got their own campaign committees. They got their own agenda, and they're coming from their own place as opposed to, you know, a state central committee maybe, or a political machine or operation in a particular part of the state. There's a much more decentralized thing. I think the leadership is just sort of reflecting that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, styles and personalities are a little different, but the underpinnings of the system, you know, process-wise, and, you know, due to the numbers in the Senate being less, you know, there's naturally different dynamics over there. I honestly think, I mean, you know, credit for the changes, but there's also a lot of things that, you know, aren't changed, you know, and I think even preceding Mike Bush and preceding Mike Miller, someone could say the same thing prior to their tenure as presiding officers of the respective chambers. So, you know, I think it's more, you know, Senate President Ferguson has, you know, different approach to things than Mike Miller did, certainly. But I think there's a lot of things that, you know, particularly to the outside observer, but even, you know, from the insider, so to speak, that, you know, the things are very similar to what they were in the Miller era and the Bush era. You know, and they need to be because of just the nature of the respective bodies.
I think they're both sort of quiet, I don't want to say underdog figures, but, you know, the Senate president's in that job because the Senate president is who he is. I mean, I've tried to count that guy out of not beating George Della, you know, and you know, I remember trying to talk him out of that race, and he proved me wrong. And then Adrian Jones, when I was in Baltimore County, you know, there was one human. Towson's a weird place, right? It's very small. Power is centralized in 7 council people and a county executive. And, you know, it's kind of old timey up there. And that leader, Speaker Jones, when she was our head of human practices, she was in the cabinet of like 5 different county executives. She would show up. She would not talk that much. She would do a lot of listening. And then she would just deliver the biggest thing the county needed every gosh darn year, you know? And so, you know, it's kind of a culture shock to see that quiet person go up to the rostrum, but, you know, she is a delivery unit. I mean, she just gets things done, and you could ask any old, you know, person in Essex about it, or somebody down in Annapolis, and they count on that leader. They count on the speaker. So, you know, I think they both offer, as you do, they both offer a lot of interesting elements. I think will help us all as a community of lobbyists and professionals and public affairs people grow, you know, that's for sure. And that growth will be a little painful for some of us that had comfortable contacts, but you know, it's I think it's an evolving culture. And I think you two are just very open, remarkable leaders that give us a window into that place. And can't thank you enough for joining us.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to chat with you and catch up.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Any last plug, you know, that's all I can do is offer plugs. Anything else, anything you got going? You guys don't need any plugs, but any last thoughts you want to leave us with?
No, you said it's been a while since you came down to Annapolis. Let's go get some crab cakes.
I'm in. You know, if you have any ideas, a couple things I'll plug. Baltimore Positive has a crab cake tour coming up. So if you have anything you want to do in the crab cake space, let us know. We can get some coverage for your favorite crab cake joint. And then also we got a big event in April for Speaker Pelosi and the entire federal delegation, if you have any people that want to be a part of that. How's that for? That's an old Mike Miller style plug.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for joining us, Coppice.
Thank you.
Thanks, Damien.
They'll lead you to the right place.
Thank you
so much, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks, guys.